This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, and sitting in with us today is our buddy from ESPN.com who does such a great job covering the Seahawks, so it's perfect that he's here today. Brady Henderson is with us. How are you, man?
What's up, Bob? Good to be here, man. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to have you here. It's a perfect day to have you here. We're going to talk a lot of football. We got the John Schneider Show coming up at 4 o'clock today. We'll talk to Paul Moyer at 3 o'clock. Scott Service will join us at 3:45. He's got a cool thing coming up we want to talk about, so we'll do that at 3:45. And as always, you guys can text in throughout the show, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. So good to have Brady here for Dave Wyman. A bunch of stuff to get to. Want to get your take on a whole bunch of things. I was already peppering you with questions before we even came on the air, so you're probably exhausted.
Well, I'm really just here for the Scott Service interview. I cannot wait to talk to Scott. I've got a lot of baseball questions.
Brady was practicing before the show saying, so, Service. Your name's Scott, right?
He's the coach, right?
He's the manager, yeah.
The manager, yeah. Okay.
You should just go on your own in this interview. I'll just take a time out and let it fly. That'll be great. We saw the Stephon Diggs trade. I just talked about that in the snapshot, that they cut off the final 3 years of his deal so he can be a free agent coming up. He's a guy that, again, saying to you off the air, that he kind of epitomizes that stereotype of a wide receiver.
Of the diva wide receiver.
The diva wide receiver that just is not happy unless I'm getting X amount of targets a game. Wildly talented. A huge weapon. Don't debate his ability and what he does. But he lives up to that stereotype, right?
In many ways. The subtweeting, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He'll you know if he's unhappy. Yeah. He'll let you know.
Yep.
What I don't get, we touched on this yesterday briefly, and I'm curious to get your take on this, is when it comes to DK Metcalf, he seems to get painted with that same brush by a lot of local fans. I don't know about nationally, but local fans, we got it yesterday. Dave and I were talking about the fact that I've never heard behind the scenes, on the record, off the record, that, hey, man, he's really mad about not getting targets. And not once since he's been here have I ever heard that he's upset about targets or he doesn't have enough of a role in the offense. His angst, his anger, his animation is always directed at the opposition, and sometimes it is detrimental, but he gets painted with those colors, if you will. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, it's probably just the same reason why this happens a lot with NFL players, where people make assumptions without really knowing, you know, exactly what's going on, and they try to connect dots and everything. But I would agree with you that would be an unfair connection to make, because it is very different.
When you're more behind the scenes than I am by a long shot. You're around this team 24/7 during the season. Have you ever heard of him being upset about targets?
About targets? No. Nope, I have never heard that. No, I mean, and look, he is definitely a passionate guy who's, you know, the volatility does come out sometimes, but to your point, it's always against the opposition, and it does, you know, it does hurt the team, but it is a lot different, I think, than what you see with a lot of other, you know, the stereotypical diva receiver, where they're complaining about their role in the offense and what have you. And so, yeah, I think that comparison is a bit unfair. And, you know, one thing that I think DK Metcalf has maybe not been recognized about him is, you know, for all of the extracurricular stuff that there is on the field, you know, with sometimes drawing penalties and fines, you know, he was available after every game. So there was never a moment where I can't recall a moment in the last few seasons, if ever, where he declined, you know, to speak to reporters. So even when he's really worked up after games, you know, he'll talk to us, to his credit. And so and he typically takes ownership for that stuff. So I think there is a distinction to be drawn between what he's done and your stereotypical, prototypical diva behavior.
Something else that seems to be a more recent phenomenon is that There's a segment of the fan base. There are some hosts. I know Mike Salk has presented this idea a few times, the idea of trading DK Metcalf, which I don't quite get, because I look at DK and I go, this is a receiver in the way that he's built, his speed, his production, his blocking ability, his availability. The Seahawks have never, in the history of their organization, had a receiver like that. We've looked from afar and said, man, how cool would it be to have a Julio Jones, a big guy like that who's physical and can come down with the ball and can win just be that extra meeting guy, as Dave calls him, that weapon. Yet there seems to be some motivation amongst some to say, yeah, trade him, see what you can get for him. I think, why would you trade away the one thing this organization has never had?
I would agree with you there. Yeah, it's a really good point about the difficulty in replacing that skill set. But I think whenever we have this discussion, I think it's important to first start out by laying out that this whole idea of trading DK, I don't think has ever been rooted in any sort of reality, like any sort of hard news report that this is something the Seahawks are considering or would considering. It's purely something that has just been thrown out there as, hey, you know, he is their most tradable asset. I don't think there's any doubt about that outside of maybe Witherspoon. But, you know, it's purely based on the idea that, you know, this guy could get you a whole lot and he could plug holes on your roster elsewhere. But it's not rooted in, yeah, this is something that somebody has reported is actually, you know, a consideration. So it's just important to note that. But your point is a good one about how it's not like just trading any other 1,000-yard receiver where, yeah, you could maybe replace that production if you get a first-round pick and you hit on that guy, and he can eventually give you, you know, 1,100 yards, 7 touchdowns a year, whatever it is. But that just viewing it like that ignores all the other stuff that DK gives you that doesn't necessarily show up in the stat sheet, like all of the double teams that he draws that open up opportunities, you know, for teammates and stuff mm-hmm. that, you know, you don't really see that in the stat sheet, but a guy like that who can run, who's that big, who can run like that, you know, he attracts a lot of attention that, you know, at least in theory, opens things up for teammates.
Yeah. And I think he's a fantastic blocker. He's very physical as a blocker. And then the other thing that I think was the biggest concern when they drafted him, and the reason he was at the bottom of the second round, was, is he going to be available? Right. He's had these injuries, the neck injury, scared some teams off. This guy doesn't miss any time. He's out there every single week. He does not miss time. So I don't know. The dissatisfaction from some I find interesting. You know, everybody's entitled to their opinion, and you guys can text in on it if you want. But speaking of Salk, and Brock and Salk had ESPN's Matt Miller on, and they were talking to him about the Stephon Diggs trade. So they asked, is that the return similar to what the DK Metcalf trade would bring back?
I don't think so, just because Diggs was so outspoken. And I think that is why, you know, he hurt his value, honestly. And then the fact that Buffalo has to take on $30 million in dead cap to trade him. I think those situations are really, really different. So I don't see that being the case without knowing, you know, off the top of my head, DK's contract situation. That can sometimes factor into it. You know, it's like, hey, we got to turn around and pay this guy. That's going to decrease what we're getting back in the trade. But I don't know that. I think Diggs' situation was pretty unique.
Yeah, I agree with Matt that this is an apples and oranges comparison here. When you're talking about what Buffalo got for a, 30-plus-year-old Stephon Diggs versus what the Seahawks would theoretically get for a 26-year-old DK Metcalf, I think the better comparison, and again, this is a purely hypothetical thing that's not rooted in any sort of knowledge that this is something that's ever been considered, but I think the better comparison would be what the Titans got for A.J. Brown when they traded him to Philadelphia, I think during the draft a couple years ago. I believe that was a first and a third. And the reason why that would be a more applicable situation is because, A, you know, they are, or at least at the time, were around the same age, like both, you know, in the same draft, both second round picks. So, you know, the player profiles are a little bit similar age-wise. Now, the reason I think that the Seahawks, again, in theory, should be able to get more than that was because when Tennessee traded Brown to Philadelphia, he needed a new contract. Mm-hmm. So the Eagles gave him, I think, a 4-year, $100 million contract. So they had to pay the entirety of that. Whereas if the Seahawks were, you know, when you trade a player who's already under contract, you know, the team has already paid that signing bonus. So the new team would only take on the remaining, you know, base salary and whatever other bonus money. So, it would actually be the other team would be getting a better value contract wise. And that would in theory increase the trade value to the team that's, you know, sending the player away.
Yeah. It's, I get why it would be attractive to any other team around the league. I'm not certain why it would be attractive to Seattle at this point, because you're looking at, Tyler Lockett, who maybe it's his last year. I know they restructured his deal. He is getting. I still love Tyler. I think he's a huge part of this offense. Another guy that people seem to have turned on a bit, which I don't quite get. JSN looks like he's going to be very good. But outside of that, listen, we love to say Bobo's name, and he's a great story, this underdog, you know, slow guy by wide receiver standards, yeah. And he's made a couple of nice catches, but is he going to be a go-to guy in this offense for years to come? I don't know. I need to see more of that before I lean on that. We played this other comment. This is from John Middlecoff from the Volume. And he's speculating on he's throwing it out. It sounds like just a hypothetical, but just the way he phrased this cracked me up. Talking about the Chiefs potentially being interested in DK. Listen to what he said here.
What if the Chiefs, do I think they would trade pick 32 for DK? I wonder if they think about it. Now, I don't know, you know, big picture, part of the space, you know, signing their own guys, right? They have some young core pieces on the offensive line, a guard, a center, a good linebacker. That are not going to be cheap. But listen, I know the way Andy thinks. Right? Andy likes sweet players. Right? I mean, think about some of the guys the last 15 years that he's used a lot, from Deshaun to Macklin to Shady to what he did with Jamal Charles to drafting Tyreek and obviously Kelsey. I would imagine he likes DK Metcalf. And think about DK Metcalf with Patrick Mahomes. Now, it takes two to tango. Wouldn't John Schneider just want DK Metcalf on his team? To me, part of the draw of Seattle is the nucleus they have. Maybe they go, hey, it's a good receiver draft. Now, there are financial ramifications on doing this, but you never know.
I just like that he said, now, would the Chiefs give up number 32 for DK? I don't know. Like, what? It better be that and,
right.
And yeah. Number 32.
Yeah, I would think that would be like a starting point. And again, go back to the A.J. Brown trade a couple years ago. That was a first and a third. I don't see how, if you're trading a 20, what was DK, 26 years old?
Yeah, I'll look it up here.
Doesn't miss time. He's good for 1,000 yards and 7 or 8 touchdowns pretty much every year. Yeah, I don't see any way why, you know, you would do that for anything less than what A.J. Brown got. And again, I don't think that that's something they are or have given a whole lot of thought to anyways. I think this whole conversation is just purely based in the hypothetical.
Yeah, it is. It just seems to have gained a little momentum, and we get texts from people saying, yeah, you got to do it. And I get it from the value point. If they're looking at it going, hey, we've got X amount of holes. We've only got 7 draft picks. How do you fill those holes and remain a competitive team who's playoff bound? This is your most valuable piece. He's going to bring back the most return and trade. I guess I get it from that standpoint, but he's also, again, an element that this franchise has never had.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, just think of all of the moves the Seahawks tried to make. Remember the whole thing about Pete Carroll was he always wanted a big receiver. Think back to all of the different guys that they tried to bring in here to fill that spot. Remember Mike Williams?
Yes.
The original Mike Williams back in the Carroll had at USC, who I think was one of the first guys that really opened his eyes to how big of a difference maker that big receiver can be. You know, remember they brought Mike Williams in 2010. They signed Sidney Rice. They tried to sign, I think, Vincent Jackson a couple times. They brought in Brandon Marshall for a visit and then ended up signing him a number of years later.
Brought Braylon Edwards.
Yeah, Terrell Owens even had a cup of coffee with the Seahawks, I think, in the 2012 offseason. There's another guy, Chris Matthews. You know, I mean, they've tried to find that guy for years. They finally found him. And I also think it's worth just considering this. Like, when big-time players get traded, these big blockbuster trades, it's typically for one or a combination of a few reasons. One, you know, the guy is coming up on a contract and the team doesn't feel like they're going to be able to re-sign him. They've already tried to, like with the Jets a couple years ago. You know, the Jets just realized they weren't going to be able to re-sign Jamal Adams, so they traded him to Seattle. In other cases, the guy may be getting older and he's not really, you know, he's not really playing up to the contract, or the guy has become such a problem in the locker room, which I think was the case with Stephon Diggs, and the guy clearly wanted out. I don't think any of those apply to this situation here. DK Metcalf is still in his mid-20s.
Just turned 26 in December.
That's right. Just turned 26. He's still producing. Again, we talked about some of the volatility that comes out on the field, which, yeah, I don't think they're thrilled about, but there's certain behavior that you can deal with as a team when a guy is producing and giving you 1,000 yards or close to it, you know, and 7, 8, you know, maybe double digit touchdowns every year. So none of those typical reasons why you typically see big time players get traded, I don't think any of those apply here.
Yeah, just looking at his numbers, by the way, he's missed one game in five seasons.
One game.
One game for a guy that came into the league with some concerns. Again, that's why he was at the bottom of the second round. He's missed one game in 5 years. He's gone over 1,000 yards. His worst year yardage-wise is 900 yards, his rookie year.
Rookie year, yeah.
Yeah. He's had double-digit touchdowns 2 years, 12, 10. Last year he had 8. His rookie year was 7. He's everything you want in a receiver. I think some of maybe what limits his stats is the offense that he's in and who, you know, how they've run that offense at times. So it's just, I don't know. You guys, again, can weigh in, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. If that's a move you'd want to make, you got to tell me why. What is it that would want you to see the Seahawks move on from him? Because for me, as a Seahawks fan, and just looking at what he brings, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the one argument is that he is one of your most tradable assets, if not the most tradable asset. He would get you a number of pieces in return that would help you, you know, fill other holes on your roster. But I think at the end of the day, you're kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul there, because as you said to start out the conversation, it's not like you could just draft. It's not like you just get a first round pick and then draft a receiver who's going to immediately replace him. Maybe eventually you get somebody who could give you something similar to that production, but A, that's not a given, and B, you're probably not going to get the other stuff that comes with that, meaning all the attention that he draws from defenses with just the combination of size and speed that you just do not see at that position outside of a very, very small handful of guys across the NFL.
Yeah, moving on, I wanted to ask you about this. We had John on last week, and he was talking about the second phase of free agency. And this team still has holes to fill, most notably on the offensive line. And I know you've written about this. You've talked about some guys out there that they could target, that they've brought in some cases. What are there guys out there that you think, are they just plugging holes? Or are there guys out there in terms of guards or just O-linemen in general you look at and go, that could be a piece here for a couple of years? How do you see the market as it sits right now?
Well, just based on what I know about the guys that they've had their eye on, Laken Tomlinson is one of those guys. Cody Whitehair is another. And then Greg Van Roten is another guy who they brought in for a visit yesterday. Now, all those guys are in their early to mid-30s. Tomlinson and Whitehair both, I believe, have a Pro Bowl on their resume a number of years ago. But, all of these guys, I think, would be short-term, probably one-year stopgap type players who, they would be veteran starters who have a ton of starting experience and who could help what is, a pretty young offensive line. I mean, the most veteran guy they sign or they have there is George Fant. Aside from that, it's a lot of youth, third-year tackles, Charles Cross, Abe Lucas. You've got what will probably be a second-year starting center in Oluwatimi. Anthony Bradford is a second year player who's going to maybe be competing for a spot at right guard. So you just got a lot of youth in there, not a whole lot of veteran presence. And, one of these guys that they're going to sign would help fill that void there.
Do you pay much attention to the mock drafts?
Sure.
I know you write certain things, like they come to you to make a pick for the Seahawks, but
yeah,
just in terms of consistency, I mean, there's so many, I love it. I love just, going from website to website and just seeing what each expert analyst is predicting for the Seahawks. And a name that's come up a lot is Fautanu, Troy Fautanu. Mm-hmm. He's a guy, I mean, skill is to me beyond reproach, but John has said, we don't draft for need. That's when we make mistakes. We're going to take the best guy available. So we don't know who's going to be sitting there at 16. But considering how pressing the need seems to be on the O-line, if he's sitting there, can they afford to pass him and take a, hey, we've got this this wide receiver ranked higher. We've got this linebacker ranked higher. We've got this running back. I don't know. Whoever they've got ranked higher on their board, can they afford that with just 7 picks as they sit right now?
It would make a whole lot of sense. I mean, considering the need, considering the player profile, considering just the person too, by all accounts, he's just a stud of a guy as well. And obviously the connection between the offensive coordinator and the offensive line coach who both coached him at UW. So yeah, it would make a lot of sense. rarely are these things as simple as they sometimes look, you know, because you don't know if that guy is going to be available. You don't know what's going to happen before that. So, you know, one scenario that I think is worth keeping in mind is, you know, what if five quarterbacks go in the first, I don't know, 11, 12 picks, 12, 13 picks. Now all of a sudden that's a dream scenario for Seattle. If you believe that they're not looking for a quarterback in the first round, now, you know, the draft really starts at you know, well beyond the first pick. And they could be in a situation where, you know, somebody wants to move up for that pick, or, you know, they could be in a situation where, you know, five quarterbacks have gone, they weren't really considering any of those guys. And so now they're in a spot where, you know, one of the guys they really like could fall to them, or, you know, somebody could, that the value of that 16th overall pick could really increase because, you know, some other team wants to move up. So, you know, maybe the ideal scenario would be something like that, where five quarterbacks go, somebody jumps up ahead of them to take a quarterback, and all of a sudden five quarterbacks are off the board and they're left with, you know, a couple different options for a guard, and maybe they could trade back a few spots and still feel like they could get, you know, one of their top two guys at that spot. And so they're in a much different situation now picking at 16 than they typically are when they're in the 20s, you know, mm-hmm. for all those years that you saw them pick in the 20s. And a lot of times they traded back. And I think a big reason for that is that, you know, people who are in the NFL will tell you that in a given draft, there's maybe somewhere in the neighborhood of, like, I don't know, 19 to 22. I'm just throwing out numbers, like somewhere around 20 players that are true first round talents that the majority of the NFL would consider, like, yeah, this guy is a true first round talent.
Right.
So if you're picking at 25, 26, like they have a number of years picked in that territory, a lot of times the decision they've been faced with is, okay, at this spot, you're looking at a second round talent, and the difference between a guy you could get at 26 and 36 is not all that big. So why not trade back 10 spots, pick up an extra pick, and you get the same caliber of player at 36 that you would be able to get by staying put at 26. The calculus is different, I think, at 16, because at that spot, you're more likely to get a true first round talent, and you might be in a spot where the value of that pick could increase because somebody wants to move up to get somebody else.
All right, let's take two.
Well, the A's have made it official. They're playing in West Sacramento for the next three seasons, 2025, 2026, and 2027.
Lame. Their owner stinks. I feel terrible for their fans. And they're playing in an appropriately sized stadium where I think, you know, there's a max capacity if they fill up the berm of 14,000, which I'm going to guess they will not, because it's not a great product, and the owner is done poorly by the fan base out there. So I feel bad for them.
So now this is just a temporary home while the Vegas stadium in Vegas gets built.
Yeah.
But is it correct that there's no guarantee that the stadium will actually get built in Vegas?
I don't know where it sits. There's legal challenges out there. The mayor is less than enthused, saying you really should try to work things out in Vegas or in Oakland.
The Vegas mayor saying
the
that?
Vegas mayor said that. So it's a weird situation. I mean, it doesn't look like it's tenable. It doesn't look like it's something that can be fixed in Oakland, but still holding out hope, because I feel bad for the hardcore fans out there. They need a better owner.
A couple of NFL moves. Free agent linebacker Kyle Van Noy has re-signed with the Ravens. That's a two-year deal. And the Eagles announced a three-year, $66 million extension with left tackle Jordan Mailata.
Yeah, Jordan Mailata is an interesting player. He did not have a ton of football experience. Was a rugby player. I think the Eagles drafted him in the seventh round in 2018, and he's developed into a very good left tackle, and he just got paid accordingly. Kyle Van Noy, he is sort of relevant as far as Mike McDonald is concerned, because he's one of those guys that, you know, really had kind of a nice career resurgence last season in Baltimore, playing for Mike McDonald, the defensive coordinator there. And so, you know, Van Noy was one of those players who, you know, some people connecting the dots thinking, okay, you know, who could Mike McDonald kind of poach from Baltimore's defense? Obviously that didn't happen, and we have not seen any former Ravens that have jumped ship to Seattle yet.
All right, Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife prostate. Coming up, the Seahawks made big changes at two key positions this offseason, but did it make them better or worse on defense? We'll get into that next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob with Brady Henderson in. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
You know who this is, Brady?
Is this your old band, The Living End?
It is not.
Okay.
This is Walking Papers.
Oh, this is, yeah, okay.
Love these guys. Love them. It is Wyman and Bob with Brady Henderson in for Dave Wyman today. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. We've got the John Schneider Show coming up at 4 o'clock today, so make sure you stay tuned for that. Scott Servais will join us at 3:45 today. He's got a cool event coming up we're going to talk to him about, and then our buddy Paul Moyer at 3 o'clock, and we'll run some of this stuff by him. Quickly, before we get to our topic, going into the break, we said, hey, the Seahawks made big changes at two very key positions on defense. Did it make them better? Text came in from the 425 that says, ha, 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 no changes that they make ever make them better. That was a trick question. Nice try, guys.
Okay.
Does that seem cynical? Does that seem like somebody
just a tad? Just, yeah.
I just thought that was funny.
You could probably think of a couple changes that made.
Well, the ones we're referring to, and again, you guys can text in whenever you want, 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. They made changes at linebacker. Obviously, Bobby Wagner, Jordan Brooks are out. And at safety, with Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams leaving. Now, you bring in some guys who are lesser known in the name, in the way of name value. And we'd spoken to Paul Moyer. He really liked the linebackers. We can get deeper into it when he joins us at 3 o'clock. But how do you see that? Do you look at that as a lateral move, an upgrade, a step back, or maybe it's not a fair question because we haven't seen him in the system on the field yet, but just first blush reaction to those moves.
Yeah, it is hard to say without seeing these guys. And, you know, I haven't watched a whole lot of Jacksonville Jaguars games over the years, or even Dolphins games for that matter. So, yeah, I need to kind of see it before I believe that they've gotten better as a whole with these moves. Certainly what we can say is that they have found better values, and they're not just making changes for the sake of making changes. I think, you know, they're making changes because they think that they're going to be better off for these, whether it's, you know, similar caliber players but better value, or maybe better value and better player as well. And, you know, just going from, let's say, for instance, Quandre Diggs to Rayshon Jenkins, I mean, nothing in, you know, Jenkins, you know, resume would indicate, yeah, he's a clear upgrade, but he is quite a bit cheaper, even with the, I think, $10 million that the Seahawks are taking on in dead money with Quandre Diggs. You know, I think Rayshon Jenkins is only going to count, I've got it pulled up here, about a little over $4 million against the salary cap this year. So he is quite a bit cheaper than Quandre Diggs, and it does sound like he can play, you know, both spots, has played kind of the deep safety and has also played in the box quite a bit, so he can bring some of the versatility. Sounds like he's kind of an aggressive player a la Diggs, and I'm interested to hear Paul Moyer's take on what that move looks like, because it's just hard for me to say, yeah, they definitely got better, but you can certainly say they got cheaper and maybe it's just a better value.
Are you a Pro Football Focus guy?
I am decidedly not a Pro Football Focus guy.
Okay. Neither is Dave. A lot of people look at it and go, come on. But if you are, they've got Dodson rated as one of, like, the best linebackers in the NFC. I think they had him rated ahead of Fred Warner or something crazy like that, where you're going, all right, listen, I'm not a 49er fan, but Fred Warner is a stud linebacker, and you're telling me that this kid's coming over and he's already a better, by their metric, a better linebacker?
Probably not.
I hope that's true, but kind of tough to believe. But the linebacker position was one that was interesting at times. You know, I mean, listen, you have a legend in Bobby Wagner playing there. He's the greatest linebacker in the history of this organization, with all due respect to Dave Wyman. But he's not that guy anymore. He accumulates a lot of tackles, yeah. But the question was always, where are those tackles taking place on the field?
Right.
Do you have any specific feelings about the guys they brought in to occupy? Brooks, I think, was a little more surprised. I think we kind of felt like maybe they would bring him back. They didn't. So now you got two new linebackers in those spots.
Yeah, and that one was a little surprising, just because the deal that he signed with Miami, I think it was 3 years and somewhere around $25 million, something like that, was more reasonable than I thought. I would have thought he would kind of be in the double digits, so somewhere around $10 million. So it wasn't a massive deal, but it sounds like, you know, they had prioritized signing Leonard Williams.
Yeah.
And maybe didn't feel like they could do both of those, or were unsure that they could do both of those, and they were waiting to get clarity on Leonard Williams' situation before they made Brooks an offer. And it turns out Miami was just willing and able to move more quickly on Brooks than Seattle was. And so, you know, obviously Miami felt like Brooks was a better player than Jerome Baker. The one thing Jerome Baker has going for him over Brooks is that he's been more of a playmaker over his career. I mean, over 20 career sacks in six seasons, I think 4 or 5 interceptions. So you do get some playmaking ability there. And I don't think, you know, I don't think he would have been released had it not been for a couple injuries he suffered late last season. There was a knee injury that sidelined him for 4 games. And then I think when he came back from that, he dislocated his wrist and ended up missing their playoff game and needed surgery on that. So, you know, he was once making a pretty good amount of money. And was like considered one of the up and coming inside linebackers in the NFL. And he's not too far removed from that. So he's an interesting player. Now, Dodson, you know, another guy on a 1-year deal, I think for $4 million and change. I wonder if, you know, Buffalo, if they were in a better cap situation, if they would have made, you know, if they would have had a better chance of re-signing him. You know, he's been playing behind a couple of pretty good inside linebackers the last few years in Matt Milano and Edmonds. And so didn't really get his chance to play until I think midway through last season. But, you know, another guy who is on, you know, a short-term kind of inexpensive contract that has really been the theme of the guys that they've signed in free agency. Now, whether or not the Seahawks are better off at inside linebacker, I think that remains to be seen. I do think they will be faster as a whole, just getting younger there with Dodson. It sounds like he's a pretty good coverage player as one of his strengths. And, you know, I think it remains to be seen. Like, one thing that Bobby Wagner, even at his age, did very well, in addition to the leadership that he brought, is a really good tackler. And so I'm interested to see if the tackling falls off at all now that he's no longer there.
All right, coming up, the Bills trading Stephon Diggs might have helped the Seahawks in the draft, and we'll explain how that could come to be. That is coming up next. It's Wyman and Bob with Brady Henderson in. We are live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center right here, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Coming up at 3 o'clock, our buddy Paul Moyer will join us for his weekly appearance here with Wyman and Bob. We got Brady Henderson sitting in for Dave Wyman today. We are live at the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, and we'll have the John Schneider Show coming up at 4 o'clock. At 3:45, we'll have Scott Servais joining us from the road out there in Milwaukee. He's got a cool event coming up. Want to talk to him about. Text is there for you. Text line is there for you. 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Some mean texts already coming in.
Oh, boy.
This one's taking a shot at Liz. Lefko still in the studio there, Matt? Or did he run to see if the jelly beans showed up?
No, he has run out to see if the jelly beans have shown up.
Okay,
well, he's not here to defend himself.
This one comes in and says, can we do less Lefko today? Not no Lefko, to be honest. I've come to enjoy his squeaky quibbles. Just less. Lefko light, if you will. So, an early entry in the mean text for tomorrow, which
Lefko's catching strays. He's not even in the building anymore. Come on.
He's out there. He's got priorities when it comes to jelly beans, when it comes to food. That rises above everything that has to do with
He's just stepped back in, and okay, he has a box of jelly beans.
He's got a box of jelly beans. All right. There you go. He's probably smiling ear to ear.
What's the jelly bean story?
This, big thanks to a listener who sent these in for Dave. It's like 40 pounds of jelly beans.
Are you serious?
It's a massive box. Yeah.
Dave will have those done in a week.
It took me a while to bring it back over here. It was so massive. So
yeah, to stop.
Whatever
hall,
you asked me. Sorry, I'm back now. Yeah, I had to take a break in the hallway.
Wow. Okay.
Well, you didn't miss anything.
Okay.
Yeah, a listener apparently has a Jelly Belly connection on some level, and we've spent an inordinate amount of time talking about them on the air, and they apparently hooked us up with or hooked Dave up. We'll see if he wants to share with anybody. He's been known not to share.
Okay.
Well, his wife actually bought a thing of Jelly Bellies from Costco and said, bring these to the guys at work. And he said, no, these aren't going to make it out of the house. And she sent me a picture of him eating them. So he sometimes doesn't play well with others.
Well, he's, hopefully he shares. I mean, it's good to know bartenders, and it's good to know people who've got jelly bean connections.
That's right. That's right. All right. So we'll talk to Paul Moyer coming up at 3 o'clock. Our thanks to, I'm not sure the person's name, but our thanks to the person who sent that in. Big thanks, and I'm sure Dave will make great use of all of those.
So Rob Pearson. Sorry, just give him a shout out here.
Rob Pearson?
Yes. And I guess Jerry Pearson. So thank
you, Rob and Jerry Pearson. Yeah. Very cool of those guys. And we'll see if he elects to share with you, Lefko. Are you gonna rip them open before he gets in?
Okay, I will not eat any. I'm going to open this massive box just out of curiosity to see what's there because it's huge. But I won't eat any until Dave's back. I'll make that sacrifice.
Well, but then, so he's gone tomorrow, too, and then you're gone Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah, there better be some left when I get back Wednesday.
You're going to do some quality control testing there, Lefko.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's how you presented to Dave. I had to make sure they weren't poisoned, Dave. I was just doing it for you.
I had to eat all the buttered popcorn and make sure there were none for you. So there we go. I'm helping you out, Dave.
All right. Moving on. There's a theory floating around now that the Bills want to trade up from number. They're currently sitting at number 28. Since they got rid of Stephon Diggs, they want a wide receiver. Matt Miller was asked how valuable the number 16 pick is right now.
It got a lot more valuable today with the Bills trading Stephon Diggs because I think we're trying to figure out where that fourth wide receiver comes off the board. That is something that is certainly a question mark now of, okay, where does wide receiver four factor in? And that's where, you know, if you are, you know, Buffalo trying to get up there, even some of these teams in the 20s, there's going to be such a run on offensive tackles now that if you're one of those teams and you say, hey, we can't wait. We cannot afford to sit and wait. We got to go get a tackle. I think 16 becomes pretty valuable in that regard as well.
So possibly an opportunity for John to accumulate more picks. They've got 7 as we speak. You feel like he wants more. But the one year I was certain that they would accumulate more picks was the year they had 3. And they didn't. They made no moves, and they sat with 3. And I'm still in disbelief. I was dead wrong on that. I said, there's no way John Schneider goes through an entire draft with just 3 draft picks. They did.
Yeah, and that probably was not for lack of trying. I mean, it always takes 2 to tango. You got to find somebody else willing to trade up in that spot. Now, in terms of the Bills wanting to move up to get a receiver, I don't doubt that for one bit, just because, you know, if you look at their receiver core after the Diggs trade, I mean, I believe they lost Gabe Davis in free agency as well, and so mm-hmm. Their top 3 guys, it's not exactly a who's who. And so I certainly buy that they'd be looking to move up. Now, going from 28 to 16 would be a pretty significant jump. I think if you just look at the trade value chart, I think that'd be the equivalent of about a second round pick. So, yeah, that could make some sense for the Seahawks, considering they don't currently have that second round pick. Now, the question is, would they want to move all the way back to 28? Would they feel like, if they've got a few guys in mind that they want to take, would they feel like they could still get that guy if they moved all the way back to 28? I think that would be another question. But in terms of finding a team that may want to move up to that spot for a need that makes sense and to get a pick that the Seahawks don't currently have, yeah, I think there's a lot there.
What's your, again, asking you to guess, so I acknowledge not
sure.
Totally fair. You think they make the pick at 16 or they trade back or trade up? They trade somewhere. They pick somewhere other than 16 in the first round. How about that?
Yeah, well, I don't think they're going to trade up. And feel free to clip this and you know, save it for Old Takes Exposed for when they do. You can all own it. But I mean, just the fact that they, you know, don't have a second round pick, they gave up one of their 2 third round picks. I think that was part of the thought process in making the Sam Howell trade, was they already felt like at 16 without a second round pick, they didn't feel like they'd be able to move up for a quarterback, and so. Decided to make that trade. I think that was part of the rationale there, is they didn't feel like they had a lot of flexibility to begin with. They have even less flexibility to move up now that they gave up one of those 2 third round picks. So I think it's either trade back or stay put. I you got to give the slight advantage towards trading back, just given the history and given the fact that they don't have that second round pick. But you know, again, it wouldn't shock me, if it would not surprise me at all if they stay put there, because again, you know, the board might fall in a certain way where you get a ton of quarterbacks who go early. You know, maybe a guy that they didn't think they'd have a chance to get is sitting right there, and maybe they have less incentive to move on because of that.
I'm pretty sure when John Schneider joins us at 4 o'clock, we can ask him that question.
Oh, he'll tell us. Yeah, he's got the trade all worked out already.
Yeah. John, are you going to pick at 16? Or are you going to trade back? What do you think will happen? He'll give us all the details, who they're talking to, and all that. So, I would almost want to ask him that question just to see the look on his face. Did you bump your head? What makes you think I would even answer that?
I mean, yeah, when we do the, you know, for a number of years, we did like the pre-draft press conferences mm-hmm. where the media guys would go into the auditorium and he would sit there with Pete and he would start out with the same joke saying, all right, well, here's who we're going to take. yeah. So if only it was that easy.
Yeah. And it's funny every year, right?
Yeah.
Every year, Everybody laughed. No, it's interesting because I look at this team and go, well, they've got more than seven holes on this team to fill, and you've got seven picks. Now, assuming every one of those picks hits and becomes a contributor, I feel like you're still a little shy. Now, there is the second phase of free agency. They can go out, obviously, and do what they need to do there, but they're not in a great financial position to be, you know, to be super aggressive in that sense. So I think it feels like they're relying on their draft to shore up a lot of what their needs are right now based on their finances. Is that seem accurate to you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also safe to assume that they're going to sign a veteran guard at some point before the draft, probably a lot closer to now than the start of the draft. And I think it's going to be one of those three guys we talked about, either Lakin Tomlinson, Cody Whitehair, or maybe Greg Van Roten. So at that point, I think they will have done a nice job of plugging most, if not all, of their big needs. You could still look at the other guard spot as a need. I think they may view it as less of a need than people on the outside do because they believe in some of their younger guys.
Believe in Bradford.
Bradford, and you know, they think that the young offensive tackles, McClendon Curtis and Raekwon O'Neal, can maybe be an option at guard as well. I still think they're going to draft another guard at some point, even after signing a veteran guy. But going back to the original point, I think they've done a nice job of not going into the draft, again, assuming they sign a guard before the draft, of not going into the draft with like a glaring need, which can really get you in trouble. And I would go back to what happened in 2019. That was the year that they drafted LJ Collier in the first round. So remember what happened a couple days before that draft. They traded Frank Clark to Kansas City. And I would, if I remember correctly, even before that Clark trade, I mean, their defensive line needed help, specifically on the edge. And then they trade Frank Clark. Remember, that was the year that they eventually signed Ziggy Ansah, and they eventually traded for Jadeveon Clowney. But those moves didn't happen until May and September, respectively. So they went into that draft with a huge need at defensive end. And I think because of that, they were inclined, you know, the board fell a certain way. And they were sitting there, and I think at pick 27, somewhere in the late 20s, and they were looking at, okay, there's LJ Collier here, who they did not have a first-round grade on, and the drop-off from him to the next guy was so severe that they said, okay, he's not a first-round talent, but this might be a better option, you know, because you need a guy to come in and play right away. This might be a better option than waiting until, you know, the third round to get a guy who's, you know, who's not going to be as good as him.
And we saw how that worked out.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk more about this. We'll get this guy's thoughts on the Seahawks and what they may do in terms of plugging some of those holes, as well as his thoughts on the Mariners. Big Mariner fan, Paul Moyer. He's going to join us next here. It's Wyman and Bob with Brady Henderson in. We are live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports on 710.